Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Cross podcast, is brought to you by NJR Home Services. Hit a home run for comfort with your local heating and cooling experts. Visit njrhomeservices.com.
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Hook, Line, and Splitter is presented by NJR Home Services. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Episode 45 of Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Season winding down, recording this here on Friday, August 26th. And the Blue Claws have just 9 home games left, 15 games overall in 2022. Hard to believe how fast the season goes, but we say that, I guess, every year. Today, we're joined by Blue Claws pitcher Andrew Baker, a right-hander, hard-throwing right-hander from Montgomery, Alabama, drafted by the Phillies last year out of Chipola Junior College in the 11th round. He's been pitching extremely well of late for Jersey Shore. In fact, if you go back since the beginning of July, this is entering Friday the 26th, 6 earned runs, 19 innings, 34 strikeouts, and just 6 walks for Andrew Baker. We'll get to him coming up in just a moment. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. That's Rich Green Lawns. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963. Blue Claws have fireworks here tonight on the 26th, Saturday night the 27th is Star Wars night, and then Sunday to wrap it up with the Brooklyn Cyclones, the Mets affiliate. Jersey Shore has dropped 18 of 25 between the two teams this season. They'll try to pick up a win here, or a couple of wins over the weekend. Josh Hendrickson is in town on a minor league rehab assignment. He'll pitch tonight. Since we last spoke on this podcast, of course, you know by now, Mick Abel and Andrew Painter both promoted up to Double A Reading. They will pitch this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Painter threw 6 scoreless in his Reading debut last Sunday, and Mick Abel gave up 2 runs over 6 innings, struck out 8 in his Double-A debut last Saturday. Both pitched great for the Fightin' Phils, and they have Griff McGarry on the mound tonight. Maybe a little more on that on the back end. But let's get to the guest today, Andrew Baker, who was excited to come on Hook, Line, and Splitter when we talked to him the other day. Always good to see and hear. Here's Blue Claws right-hander Andrew Baker. Our guest, Blue Claws relief pitcher Andrew Baker, who joins us today. He's thrown 6 scoreless or 6 innings, 1 unearned run so far on this homestand. Andrew, welcome. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. So you had thrown an inning at a time from April through July. Your last 3 outings have been 2 innings. You had a 2 inning outing in Greensboro a couple of weeks ago. How do you feel out there right now?
Yeah, you know, starting the season, you know, we were kind of going on a scheduled every 2 days, just 1 inning. And I think that was just because it was my first year, just trying to get my feet wet, figure out everything. And then, you know, here lately, they've been letting me go more than 1. And it's been good, you know, and I've enjoyed the way they've done it with me. And, you know, obviously the last couple of months have been really successful. And I look forward to, you know, finishing this year out strong and looking forward to next year.
You can see the strides just in the walk numbers, only 6 mm-hmm. in 19 innings in July and August, and I think it was 17 and 22 innings or in change over the first 3 months of the season. Where do you think the biggest gains have come in the command?
You know, me and Bergie worked on it a lot leading into the summer. We knew we had to change some stuff. So really taking out the unnecessary movements in the delivery, that helped out a lot. So, you know, I don't pitch out of the windup no more. Will I ever go back? Who knows? But not putting unnecessary movements out of the wind or out of the, you know, the delivery itself. And really, man, just mentally just calming down, realizing, you know, it's going to be hard each time. And, you know, just going towards the plate. And that's really helped me out a lot.
I mean, you obviously have a big live arm. At what point when you were growing up did you first hit, you know, 95 or 100 or whatever, and you realize, hey, I can throw pretty hard?
Yeah, I think the back half of my freshman year of college is kind of where I started hitting numbers. And I remember I hit 94. I thought that was crazy. And then, you know, a month later in the state tournament down in Florida, you know, I hit 97. I thought that was crazy. And then, you know, the next year I hit 98. And then, you know, my first outing was low A in Clearwater. I hit 98 or 99 one time. And now, you know, it's obviously been anywhere from, you know, 97 to 101. So really just when I got to college, I kind of started to pick up on the velo a little bit. And it's only improved every year. So
is that a focus as part of your between outing training or your off season training?
No, I mean, I don't worry about velo. I mean, obviously I make sure it's where I want it to be. I mean, obviously if it goes down any, you know, you have to worry a little bit, but not really. I mean, I don't really try and worry about the velo when I'm pitching. I mean, I don't even realize I'm throwing it that hard. Sometimes it's just trying to get outs and throw strikes most importantly. So
the last couple of games, I thought especially the Saturday game against Wilmington, but also the game on Wednesday, I guess it was last week against Wilmington too, you were mixing in all the off-speed pitches a lot. one of the games, I think you probably – I didn't chart it, but it just intuitively looked like you probably threw more off-speed pitches than you did fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that by design? I know you're trying to work on everything. You know, obviously you can't just live on one pitch. So you got to make sure
I mean,
they're good, but they complement each other.
Yeah, you know, when you can land the slider early, you know, they have to respect that and they have that in the back of their mind. So I think that makes the fastball play up even more. So, you know, sometimes when I throw multiple sliders early to get ahead, you kill them with either a fastball and, you know, they're sitting slider, or you throw another slider because they're thinking a fastball is coming. So they really congregate well together. When you can be able to land that. When you don't land it, that's when they kind of just sit fastball. They say, oh, this guy doesn't really have it today. But when you're able to land that early, it really can put you in a spot to be successful. So,
yeah, I mean, 100 miles an hour is 100 miles an hour. But, you know, if you're looking at it, these guys are good hitters. You know, mm-hmm. they can square those up too. It's mm-hmm. not as easy as 92, but mm-hmm. it's still doable as if you're not commanding the off-speed pitch. So how do you think your slider has developed over the course of the summer?
It's gotten a lot better. I think with just how the fastball has gotten better command-wise, the slider kind of tied into that as well. And it's gotten sharper. It's gotten harder. And it's really become a really good pitch for me. And going into, you know, the late innings of relief where I usually come in. So it's been good. And you know, I look forward to getting even better.
You throw a changeup?
We've tried. We kind of hung down on the shelf this year. I might try it in the offseason, but no, not as now.
So right now, just sometimes the slider has more of a curveball look.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just really a slider?
I used to call it a slurve. It used because the slider's supposed to be sharp and tight. Sometimes it's a little bit loopier. I would probably call it a power curve. That's what my coach in junior college called it. It's just a curveball with a little bit more velo to it. So probably a power curve, call a slider. I just call it a breaking ball sometimes. Who knows?
Yeah, that's what I usually say when it comes out of your hand, breaking ball. But yeah, sometimes they look a little bit different. So have you always been a reliever since you got to college, or do you have a starting background?
Ever since I got to college, I mean, I started in high school. And then I got to Chipola freshman year, was a reliever the whole year. Went to Auburn, was a reliever there. And then when I went back to Chipola, my coach there said he wanted me to be a starter. Did well as a starter, got to pro ball. And I think the path that's going to be best for me moving through the system will be a reliever in the back half, late innings. So,
yeah, absolutely. So – the draft comes last year. You know, had you talked to the Phillies before? Were they one of the teams that you thought might take you? How did the draft process go?
Yeah. Obviously, you know, I talked to a bunch of teams, and I would say the Phillies weren't even on the top of my list. You know, I just we didn't really talk that much. You know, I knew Mike. I'd seen him at some of our games. Mike Stauffer, the guy that signed me. You know, obviously saw him in the games, but never really, you know, pushed to get anything done. And, you know, obviously I was expecting to go on the second day. Didn't happen due to unfortunate events. And third day rolled around, and the Phillies were the first to call me. They said, hey, we can work this out. And I immediately was like, yeah, let's do it. And, you know, they took me in the 11th round, and I couldn't be happier about it, man.
Were you watching, following? How'd you find out?
Yeah, I was on Cape Cod at the Cape Cod Baseball League, and I was in the hotel with my parents, and we were watching it, and, you know, had it up on the iPad. So that was pretty, just me and my parents were watching it. So
did you find out when your name popped up, or did you find out when they called you before?
They called me before, and you just, Mike basically called me and said, hey, I have the means to do this. Do I have your word? If I do, we're going to do this. I said, you have my word. And they put it in and set my name over the thing, man. And I was excited. So,
yeah, I mean, it's something that you've probably been dreaming about since you were what? 10 years old, 12 years old?
But, whatever, yeah. I was younger than that, six, seven. Yeah.
So when you went to Chipola the first time, obviously they're one of the top junior college programs in the country every year. You had two stints there. What coming out of high school, where else were you looking, and how'd you end up there?
Yeah, you know, I had attention from some SEC schools coming out of high school, but they all knew I wasn't ready. I was young. You know, I was a late bloomer. So, I mean, I had a few mid-majors in Alabama, a few other junior colleges in Alabama, but I knew it was Chipola the entire time. I didn't really know anything. I didn't know how credible, how good their reputation was going there until I talked to Coach Jay and on the phone, and he told me about all of it. I didn't realize they had so many big leaguers. Bautista went there. Patrick Corbin, guys like that. You know, get there. I mean, obviously, man, I was 18 getting there, and it was, you know, I was nervous because we had a Georgia transfer that year, a Mississippi State transfer. We had a guy that was committed to Vanderbilt, and you know, you get there and it's kind of nerve wracking when you go, I'm just from high school, you know, and I'm just, you know, new freshman, but it worked out perfectly fine, and I've settled in, and you know, that was the best decision of my life, was going to junior college. So
what did you learn there that helped you when you moved into Auburn?
I'd say a work ethic. I'd say I learned a good bit about you're going to have to do your own routine. You know, Coach Jay down there is a great job at making it like pro ball as much as he can. And that's why I think I fit into pro ball so well, and didn't really have much trouble, is because at Chipola he wanted us to be like a pro ball environment, you know. And but learning the things I learned at Chipola really just propelled me to be successful at Auburn. Of course, COVID cut off the year at Auburn, but really just how to be a good teammate, work ethic, and having a routine. That was pretty much it.
So your season at Auburn, you probably only played about, what, 20 games maybe?
If that. I think we played 16 games, maybe 16 non-conference.
Yeah, that was a shame. Obviously, you know, you're from Alabama, you grew up there. That would have been a fun year, you know, for you. Obviously, really good team and great program. How'd you end up back in Chipola?
Well, I mean, it was a tough decision because I based it off of 16 games, and who knows what would have happened that year. But in my heart, I just felt like it was the best for me to go back where I was guaranteed innings. I was still developing as a player, and trying to figure out everything with the pitching. That was only year two of me from pitching, and I just knew it would be better for me to go back to somewhere where I could, you know, if I struggled, I could still get innings. You know, at SEC school, it's hard to leave a guy there because that's their job on the line too. And, you know, I understood that, but that's why I knew I had to leave, you know, and that was a good decision on my part. I got a lot of innings the next year, and I don't, you know, I enjoyed Butch and Auburn, but I just knew that was the best decision for me.
What was the experience like on the Cape that's kind of one of those unique storybook baseball opportunities that not everybody gets.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really know about what it was. I was supposed to go the summer that COVID hit. I was supposed to go play for Brewster, and then, you know, it got canceled, and they brought it back, and my coach at Chipola said he was going to send me there, and it was great, man. I mean, I'm the host dad, I actually played with his son in travel ball, so he saw my name was added to the Hyannis roster, and he immediately was like, oh yeah, I know that kid. So he hosted me, actually, and then you know, I met my girlfriend up there too, and and so all in all, man, it was a great experience.
Tell the folks about what it's like. You know, you're living with host families, you're playing in these, you know, smaller fields, not the big professional stadiums, but mm-hmm. it's really integrated into the Cape community. The support is unbelievable.
No, it was way more than I expected, to be honest with you. It was way more, and I told everybody, I said, I regret not going to the Cape every summer. Like, it was just awesome the way just the towns and being on near the water and that environment was just such a different, it was a different vibe for baseball, but it was so much fun to play there and be around all the fans. And I mean, they treated us like royalty too. So it was awesome.
So fast forward now, this year with the Phillies, you know, you're coming in there, you know, throwing 99, 100, you have Painter, you have Abel, you have McGarry here, you have Ben Brown here. How'd you guys kind of feed off each other, you know, these big power right-handed arms?
Yeah, you know, obviously that we got a bunch of guys with strong arms in this org. And, you know, when Griffin, Mick, and Painter and all of them were here, you know, we kind of just feed off of each other. We know that we don't try to throw hard. We go out there and want to throw strikes. And we talk every day about certain things. And, you know, it's a bright future for the Phillies, I think, especially with Painter and how young he is and how well he's doing. I mean, and then Mick and Griff and me and all the other guys. So it's a bright future. And hopefully sooner or later I'll see those guys again. But
absolutely. Absolutely. Hopefully soon. When you were growing up, did you play any other sports besides baseball? When did you fall in love exclusively with baseball?
Yeah, football and basketball. State football and basketball.
What position did you play in football?
I was in football as a wide receiver because I couldn't throw a football. And in basketball as a spot up 3-point shooter. like a three guard.
Did you have could you have played any of those in college or just and you picked baseball, or were you just not as good as you were in baseball?
Well, we just kind of knew that baseball would be the thing I'd want to do at the next level. And football and basketball was just on the side just to do it, you know.
Painter said he played he liked basketball, didn't love it, but he did it because it helped him stay in shape for baseball season. Obviously, it didn't tax his arm or anything, but he just liked it from a conditioning standpoint. And then he said his coach wouldn't let him play his senior year in high school.
Yeah.
So he was the team manager.
Understandably so. Yeah, I don't want him risking hurt, but nah, I think, did you say Painter said that?
Yeah, Painter said that.
I think Painter should have been a D1 punter, to be honest with you. I don't know if you've ever seen him during warm-ups, but he can punt a football about 60 yards with about 6 seconds of hang time.
Really?
He literally looks like a – so I think Painter's a good pitcher, but I think he could have punted in the NFL, to be honest with you.
That's pretty funny. All right, so you have these outings, you know, these last couple weeks. The year. What's your process between outings? Because – you know, you're going to pitch, you're going to not throw in the game, you know, the next day or two. How do you approach the next couple of days, especially when you faced now granted, you're only pitching an inning at a time or maybe two innings at a time, so you're not facing every hitter. But, you know, how do you approach those next couple of days before your next outing, especially when you're going to face the same team the next time out?
Well, yeah, one that's probably the biggest thing that's helped me out the most is, you know, I used to carry outings with me a lot. So if I had a good outing, you know, I'd carry that with me like, oh, yeah, I got it figured out. Or if I had a bad outing, I'd be like, oh, you know, well, now I got to go change everything. And, you know, Bergie always comes into the dugout after my outings, and I may be getting a little bit too fired up or maybe mad about something. And he always tells you, you're not up here, you're not down here, you're right here, which is, you know, even kill. So I think after each outing, flushing it, forgetting about it, whether it was good or bad, and you know, taking away the good from it, taking away the things you can nitpick and clean up from it. But as the outing as a whole, whether it's good or bad, forgetting about it, flushing it, it's over, it happened, move on to the, or look forward to the next one, you know. And I think that's the biggest thing for me, because I used to hang my hat on a lot of stuff or act like I had it figured out. And Bergie, and also, you know, Bree with mental performance has helped me a ton with that stuff. So that's helped me a lot.
Yeah, Bree is the mental skills coach, and works with players all over the organization. The Phillies have invested in that over the last few years. The analytical stuff, do you look at that in your outings? Do you go over that with Brad?
I really
movement on the really. Slider, that kind of thing, or spin rate.
I mean, we don't really look at like the. I don't really look at numbers, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't think it really would help me.
You have a good feel for what when you're on, when you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So goals for the rest of the year, goals going into the off season. Are you going to go, do you know if you're going to play winter ball, instructional league or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, finish strong. As far as off season goes, I'm not really sure yet. I have some options I'm looking at. But overall goals, I mean, just finish strong. And then, you know, just keep on progressing, finish stronger than the first 2 months of the season, and, you know, go home, get bigger and stronger for next year, and look forward to spring training next year. So,
does Alabama win the SEC?
Yes.
National title?
Yes.
Bryce Young won the Heisman?
Yes.
How ingrained, when did you become an Alabama fan? Like, I assume it came from your family or whatever, the whole family's Alabama.
Yeah. Now, I asked my mom, I was like, I don't know how he became Alabama fans. I think one of my late uncles went to law school there, and that's kind of what started it. And then we've been Alabama fans ever since. So even when I went to Auburn.
Yeah. Have you been to games in Tuscaloosa?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What's that? What? I talked about this with Ethan Wilson when he was on the same show a couple months ago. He was a big Auburn guy, but it's hard to put in perspective for the people in the Northeast, the day to day, you know, how people live the rivalry and live the sport day to day down there. Mm-hmm. You know, up here, football season begins when it begins, but there it never ends.
It's a lifestyle for sure. It's a lifestyle for sure. And I'm tell everybody who's never been to a game or anything in the South, I mean, you got to experience it. I mean, everywhere's different. I mean, Auburn's got their own thing. Alabama's got their own thing, just like everybody else in the SEC, Mississippi State, all them. So it's definitely an awesome thing that I wish everybody could experience at least once.
Andrew Baker, congrats on a good year so far. Keep it up. I know you're going to have probably, what, 4, 5, 6 more outings over the final couple of weeks. Best of luck to you, and we'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks to Andrew Baker for a few minutes. Lightstar Energy Group is a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users. Tailored products and contracts, lower costs, personal attention, and outstanding service. Call 732-722-5880 to learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today. Andrew Baker has thrown, we talked about it with him before, 2 innings in 4 games so far in August, including 3 in a row. He hadn't done that at all prior to this month. So obviously the Phillies have pushed him along a little bit here this month, throwing a lot more breaking balls, as we also talked about, and it's paid off in August. 3 runs in 12 innings, 20 strikeouts, and 4 walks. He struck out 20 of the 50 batters that he's faced so far this month, and he has been a bright spot at the back end of that bullpen for Jersey Shore. A couple of the guys have gone on to Reading most recently, I guess, Andrew Schultz out of the bullpen. Blue Claws also sent outfielder Ethan Wilson and infielder Luis Garcia up to Double-A Reading earlier this week. We mentioned that the open with Andrew Panier and Mick Abel, they'll pitch this weekend. Griff McGarry will pitch Friday night. I don't know when you're listening to this, but we're recording this piece here right before 2 o'clock on Friday the 26th. So obviously not a lot of time left in this 2022 regular season. So we'll see 15 games overall for the Blue Claws, 9 at home. But we'll try to get a couple of more of these up for you, since it's been, I know it's been a little bit since we last did one, which is my fault. We're going to try to get a couple of guys on. You guys would love Marcus Lee Sang, Kendall Simmons, both great personalities. So we'll try to get them on. Maybe Baron Radcliffe too, who's had a really good month of late for Jersey Shore. But hard to believe season is winding down. Last year at the end of the year, we did an episode with Emily Messina, Mike Ventola, and Pat McCarthy. Emily from Reading, Mike and Pat from Lehigh Valley, to kind of wrap up the whole year with the system. So we'll certainly do that as well in September. It's been a big week in Allentown. Of course, they had Bryce Harper there playing for the Iron Pigs on Tuesday and Wednesday. He took Thursday off, and he's going to rejoin the Phillies tonight on Friday the 26th to make his return to Philadelphia after that thumb injury suffered a few months ago. So the Blue Claws are back home on after this weekend, September 6th through 11th. It's Rothman Orthopedics Locals Summer, and that'll feature two fireworks shows, including those fireworks will be on Friday, September 9th, Saturday, September 10th. The final two fireworks shows of the year, last Thursday is Thursday night, September 8th. So just a few more chances left to see the Blue Claws this season. We'll see how it goes on the field, but certainly at the ballpark. You'll have a good time. Don't miss out, because you're going to have to wait all the way till next April to come on out to the shore, to Shore Town, I should say, and see the Blue Claws if you don't do it over the next few weeks. That'll do it for us here at Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 45. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Have a wonderful day, everybody, and enjoy a beautiful weekend here at the Jersey Shore.